muslins, linen, candlewick, the 1001 things.
Now, the way I heard it was that the platypus drank the wolf kill, and then the wolf kill swallowed the platypus.
Good night, sweet boy.
Did you hear the story of Bess Lane, the witch, and how she got the best of the devil? Tell us.
That's it. She was the one that lived up north of my grandfather's lot.
She had the gift of second sight and prophecy.
Once she charmed John Henstrake's cornfield, and the crows never pulled the hill of it.
Now, one night as she was going to bed, the devil came into her cabin, pulled horns and pitchfork. Bess, said the devil, I've come for you. Get a move on. Well, will you wait till I put this one shoe on? Cried Bess in a bit of a hurry. Yes, said the devil. And at that, she threw the shoe into the fire, whereupon the devil cleared out, leaving a great stench of brimstone. And Bess went with that foot there, or wrapped a bag round it in winter. And that's how she outdid the devil. But when she died, and the neighbor women came and lay her at the burial, they said, better not. And Bess went down to her grave with only one shoe in her coffin.
That's a good one.
Come on, Warren. Getting late. Old boss said not to forget beans and pepper and turpentine.
And some sardines and a hunk of store cheese.
Get out! The old horse jogged along and slowed down to a walk that quickened only as we neared the lane gate. And the dogs barked as we neared the house, and someone came out to hold a lantern and help unload the wagon. Then into the house for a warmed up supper.
If you feel like going home again, go back, my friend. They'll all be gone, the old folks that you knew, and it'll all be strange. Not as it once was, but go back home again. It calls for you.
Mother in an old straw hat, raising a pail.
The day is long gone, come back, and not hear you. And the land that they sought fills your mind's eye. And old sayings echo in a neighbor's speech, and the back of a boy's head is a family history. But time and again the past comes back. Old names, old times, old dreams, and old memories crowd back side by side.
I can well remember when Warren's pa died. He knew everybody for miles around well. I don't know how many wagons followed his coffin down to the graveyard. For Warren, that day seemed the longest of his life. He was just about 14 then, stayed beside his mom, but silently. He was very close to his mother. I think her death, a few years later, touched him even more deeply.
Because on the women folk, I guess, they sit and watch with folded hands that cannot help, and hopeless hearts, nor dare to show it's got to come.
Did you send word?
Yes, but he cannot get here. It's too far. Besides, he feels so bad she'd sense it from him.
Is she sleeping?
There's no way to know. She She keeps on breathing.
Her hand has lost its grasp.
Don't try to move her.
I wonder if she's dreaming. She keeps smiling.
Just sit in the dimlit room. You can't do nothing.
What were her dreams that night? Perhaps she saw us, although her eyes were blind. Perhaps she heard us through deafened ears, telling her fully just how much we loved her, what she meant to us throughout our lives. Perhaps she smiled and thought we kissed her.
It's over. She's gone. I'll call Joe.
Don't reel. Don't show your feelings. Where is the mother I used to know? Where?
Your mother's gone. She won't come back. Step softly out and shut the door behind you.
Why do you weep? Do you enjoy your tears? We must go out in the garden and raise the heads of bluebells. Tell them she has gone away and God will give her blossoms in heaven.
Warren won the state scholarship to Cornell University. He got his master's degree there, in history.
It must have made him feel good when he came back to his hometown to teach. Seems to me he must have been a good teacher. I wonder what made him leave teaching.
Warren Sherwood was the best teacher I ever had. I went 4 years to Radcliffe and never had a professor who compared to him. And there were some very well-known people at Radcliffe then. Mr. Sherwood was a great teacher by any standard. He loved history and made it come alive for us. He didn't stick to the textbook. I tell you, whenever I think of the reasons that made him resign from his job, I get so angry. It's over 20 years ago now since that happened, but I'll always feel the same.
I suppose you heard about the incident at the high school. The rumor was spread that Warren had pushed one of his pupils into her seat. This seemed like an opportunity for some of the townsfolk who didn't know him well to vent their spleen. Being so sensitive, Warren couldn't take it. I heard about it only after he resigned.
A hickory stick had a standard place in woodshed corners on every farm, and was also used with improved results in the pedagogy of local schools.
She said he pushed her into the seat, this girl said. Shoved her right into the seat because he was mad. Said he hurt her, too. She had red welts on her back for a week, her mother said.
That's not true. Mr. Sherwood may have been strict, but he wasn't hard. He was a kind man. She was pestering him to leave the room early, and he said no. And she wouldn't obey.
Their say always seems strange to me. Now, I never learned to read and write. Look at my farm. worked hard and stuck to my business, and I must say I've done pretty well. Now, Warren Sherwood spent his time loafing around the country, communing with nature, I guess.
That's right.
He always impressed me as being queer. Too deep. Seems he didn't have the patience and couldn't cope with the girl.
Mr. Sherwood wasn't a mean man. No, sir, not a cruel man. Now, maybe he shoved her into her seat because she was ornery. But that ain't no reason for pushing a man out of his career. Hurting him so bad that he turned his back on the world.
It's a tragic story. An experience like that can shatter a man's life.
After that, he took the day things, taking odd jobs, doing gardening for folks he knew, working hard with his hands always. But when his mother died, he couldn't bear to dig graves anymore. But he kept writing history and dreaming about the past. He lived in Mrs. Carney's place for a while, in that old shack across the way.
He didn't live so good, Nita. I tell you, I don't think Warren enjoyed life. No, he didn't enjoy life. He hardly ate anything, hardly enough to keep him alive. When he lived at my shack, I tried to get him something, but he just wouldn't take it. He used to get up in the middle of the night to write things down. I couldn't figure him out. Once, a professor from Cornell came down to see him the last year he stayed with me. He said that Warren was a student at the university, but Warren didn't want to see him. I guess he was ashamed of the way he was living.
He was a lonely man. Gone was the happiness that once he knew, and the old unhappiness once so keen.
Next to his mother, Warren was closest to his aunt. He felt she understood him. He was in and out of her house as a new boy, and after college. He used to take the children on long walks, tell them about the places they're home. He used to talk like it's poetry.
He was an ambitious boy, had a great sense of humor, versatile, could turn his hand to most anything. Many nights he'd come home from a hard day's work as handyman or gardener and work long hours into the night on his manuscript. Here's some hot coffee for you, Warren. You've been working awful late tonight. Don't know how you do with gardening all day, working all night.
There's so much to put down about the history of Lloyd. I've been looking for some time for the call for aid that was circulated at the time of that Dave Alkmoody's barn and contents were burned on August 6, 1807. The neighbors responded promptly and gave up liberties in food, grain, and work. The list has been handed down from son to son, and now I have it for the record of the town of Lloyd.
Your signatures form an interesting collection of the townspeople of the time. Jonathan Doyle, 1 bushel corn. Ezekiel Freer, 50 cents. John Terwillinger, a peck of grain and a day's labor. Dirk Winkle, 3 bushel hay. Josiah and Philip Eltinge, $5.
Included among them are signatures of many Revolutionary War veterans. I'm planning to go up to Kingston on my day off to get some more research done. Will you come along, Aunt Fine?
All right, Warren. I guess when you want to dig up the facts, there's no stopping you.
When I became town historian, he was the greatest help possible. I always felt he should have been the historian instead of me. He was one of the finest historical researchers I ever met. To write a story, he walked miles to check on a document. No fact was too small for him to ferret out. He was dissatisfied with anything less than perfection. Food was not important, and time no effort. He walked miles without stopping for a bite to eat.
What did happen to the manuscript he was writing?
We all knew he was working on it. He used to carry it around with him all the time. Some of the townsfolk even promised to get it published for him. It was a promise that wasn't kept. After his failure to get a publisher, it became more and more despondent.
No one knows what happened to the manuscript. He once said he'd burn it. Most people who knew him think he either buried it or sunk it in the swamp behind that shack of his. It's all very sad. It would have been a fine book.
These three for dramatization. This is Group of Camp Woodlands Counselors in Training.
Partner prominent.
The dress grew snug. She felt a little shy and folded away her memories in the chest. The babies came. There was butter to be made day after day, and bread to set and bake. These were the robust years, part sunshine and part shade.
He looked upon that rocky place and saw a field of ripening grain. Though laurel thicket, scrub, and brush were rooted deep by sun and rain, with calloused hands and aching back, he worked and brought his dream about. In spite of stubborn rock and root and frost that heaved new boulders out, he saw black furrows in the sun. To clear hill land, you need a long view. The stone boat groans with its useless load. The first crop is stone in anything new.
Red top and June grass, timothy and clover, throw down the hay. The winter's not over. Forkfuls of summer pitched out on the floor. While cold, sleet, and wind stay outside the big door. Climb on the high beam. Jump in the hay. The cattle will wait so a small boy can play. There are years coming fast, but don't hurry now. Today is the day to jump in the mouth.
Thought the wedding dress would fit her when she died.